Welcome to A Better HR Business, the podcast that looks at how HR consultants and HR tech firms grow their businesses and how they help their employers to get the best out of their people. Remember, for show notes and downloads, go to www.getmorehrclients.com/podcast. That's getmorehrclients.com/podcast. Okay, let's get started.
Hello, welcome back to the show. Great to have you along. And I'm really looking forward to today's conversation with Mary Cullen. Mary is a wonderful person and a wonderful HR business leader. She's the Managing Director of Inside HR in a wonderful part of the world, Kilkenny in Ireland. And we're going to get into it in just a moment. But firstly, Mary, great to have you on the show and great to see you again.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. I'm delighted to be here.
So for people listening, Mary's a great person, nice person. She's also got wonderful HR skills and all that sort of stuff, but she's also built an amazing business helping clients across the island of Ireland and in a range of ways, which we're going to explore now. But do you want to just give us a quick overview of what does Inside HR do and who does it help?
Yeah, well, I set up Inside HR about 20 years ago. Maybe it's probably longer, Ben, I say that, but I kind of forget my age. And set up as a single consultant, you know, like probably a lot of your audience and a lot of my peers, mainly for kind of work-life balance reasons. Mm-hmm. But over time, the business has grown and I suppose we've developed over time too. But now we very much do outsourced HR solutions. We will be very strong on compliance. So in Ireland, there's quite a lot of legislation, as there is in Europe, employee rights based legislation, and we would be experts in that. We also do quite complex workplace investigations and provide general advice and guidance to our clients, as well as a range of projects. They could be change management projects, they could be setting up information and consultation forums, they could be customized surveys and employee engagement projects. They can be absolutely anything. The team has grown and we have various people who specialize in various areas now. So it's quite exciting.
Yeah. And how do you provide the services? Is it consulting as in project based or is it retainers? How do you structure it?
We do both. But a few years ago, I started putting more emphasis on retainer based business, you know, to have that security of income coming every month, one way or the other. But we also do project-based business as well. And we try to provide, I suppose, customized solutions to our clients. And therefore, we have all sorts of arrangements with people. But the retainer model is certainly something that I have found over the years makes a lot of sense. And actually, interestingly enough, when it comes to having your business valued in the HR space, that retainer model is invaluable from that perspective.
That's a big one. Yeah, for sure. For sure. So you've talked about HR compliance and sort of projects around compliance and the HR space. Do you do any recruitment, training, learning, development, any of that sort of stuff?
Yeah, we do. We would be involved in, I suppose, probably the higher end of executive recruitment. We could be involved in helping a company scale up where they need additional resources. And so we can put HR people on site with clients for a period of time too. And that's what we would call a project, really. So it would be a short-term stint, maybe on site with the client.
Brilliant. So if you're an employer listening to this, then I'm guessing you've either got an HR team, but there are projects that need to be done that either need external expertise or you just don't have the bandwidth within the team. Perhaps you would not necessarily have all the, you know, employee law compliance expertise in-house. So you keep that sort of retainer model, the company on standby so that you've got any queries, issues you can ask. Is that the way that the employers use Inside HR?
Yeah, typically we would start with reviewing compliance, you know, look at company practice, look at developing documentation, bespoke documentation that would work for clients. And then as the relationship develops, we tend to be there as that trusted advisor. And that's one of the key things that we promise our clients. You always speak to the same person. You have a team that you will always deal with, unlike maybe some of our other competitors where you ring into a call center and you're getting differing advice every time you call. So we have dedicated people per client. And as that relationship deepens and develops, we work with our clients on various projects. And for some clients, all they want is that ear. this has happened, what should I do? Or that kind of support. And we very much, I suppose, target HR people and want to be the support for HR people specifically. We don't turn away employers or people without HR functions, but we made a decision a few years ago to focus and target specifically HR departments, HR practitioners, and become their trusted advisors. When we deal with them, then it really depends on the level of their experience, what kind of bandwidth they have, whether they're part of a large HR team who needs a specific thing done, or whether they're a standalone HR practitioner who doesn't have enough time to ever get to their policy development or their updates on the legislation or key projects.
Got it. Very good. I was smiling there when Mary was mentioning the phone line stuff to these large companies. You know, you get the graduate on the line, because I did that during college. It was actually not one of those firms, but a government line. And the brilliant thing about those phone lines when you're working there is that you have a mute button. So someone calls you up and then asks you a technical employment law question. You hit the mute button and you frantically look through that thick folder that's on your desk. And then you're shouting out to everyone else, does anyone know what the rate for this is? And then you calmly unmute yourself and give the answer and hope that it's right. Whereas if you call inside HR, you'll get all the expertise and you just get people who've done it time and time again and know exactly how to implement it, I suppose. It's not just the answer, is it? It's getting the implementation right. Anyone can do a performance management meeting or an employee survey or something, but it's the bits that go before and after that make it seamless. Is that a fair call?
I absolutely agree with you, Ben. And we're taking graduates as well who, you know, are looking for that experience. But those graduates are doing work appropriate and built up over time, not just thrown in at the deep end. And when you put someone on mute and you're frantically running around trying to find the answers to a question, from a client perspective, are you really serving the client as a business? And from my perspective as a business owner, and I think a lot of this comes back to values, how do you want your client to experience the service? And I've always had a really strong view on the fact that it's client first. Their experience must be positive. In order for us to grow and develop, I believe that you have to be that trusted advisor, and therefore you have to have experience. So the people we hire tend to be people who have worked in HR departments, who have dealt with senior management who don't listen to them or who don't trust them or who didn't go with their advice. They've learned their trade over time. They've learned how to influence. They know the tricks. They know how to be strategic, and they've come up through the ranks. So they're pretty solid, hardy people who've learned from their own mistakes over time and who are solid HR practitioners with a wide range of knowledge. And they're the type of people that I tend to go for, you know, who've learned along the way. Because you don't start out with all the answers in your career, do you? It takes time to develop it.
Well, I left my college and with my degree and thought I knew it all. And then I got my first job and realized I knew nothing. So yeah, I'm with you on that one. So you started as a solo business, and you've explained how the people you bring on to work within the business, the very highly experienced, trained, and yes, you have graduates coming through, but you support them and stuff. But it's not just you anymore, right? So what's kind of business size you these days?
Yeah, so at the moment we're about 16 people. We're actually hiring again. So wow. We have another 2 open roles at the moment, and you know, we'll be hiring again before the end of the year. And I suppose as our client base grows, as demand for our services grow, we're growing as well. So yeah, it's an exciting time. And I love this part of it, growing the business and seeing it develop and planning. That's what I do at night, is lie there thinking, you know, what next? How do I develop the business? Where do I go next?
So it's not just me doing that. That's good to know. I think every entrepreneur has probably got that little twitch in their brain there. So you've talked about growing the business. How have you marketed the business both in the early days and then these days in terms of bringing on new clients or getting work from existing clients? How have you done that, you know, the before and now?
Yeah, so before, when I first started out, like a lot of experts in their field, I was good at my job. I knew I was good at my job. I left my job and I set up my own business. And I thought, business would come to me once I produced my brochure, which of course I did. I spent, you know, a small fortune on a really nicely crafted and designed brochure and heard from no one. My phone didn't ring. So I figured out fairly quickly that the brochure alone wasn't going to do it and I would have to pick up the phone and ring people, which I found difficult. So I'm going to admit the rejection rate was quite intense. And over time, I learned that the most effective way for me to get business as a loan practitioner was through networking. And so I networked a huge amount in the early days. Anything that was going on in the local area, I was there meeting and greeting. And I developed skills, I think, in that area more than that cold calling piece, which I've never been good at. I just can't handle the rejection then. So the business grew from that perspective. And then as my reputation, my personal reputation grew, I got more and more business. But then it was too much business. I was working from the crack of dawn till late at night, trying to deliver. And that's when I started hiring people, but with no great plan in mind at that point in time. Now I'm much more strategic. And, you know, Ben, I know you worked with me and really helped us at that time because I was dealing with that conundrum about how do I sell when I'm in my house and all my team are in their houses. And Ireland had quite a strict lockdown at that time, I think more than most places in Europe. And, you know, we worked together at that time around our podcast. And the podcast, The HR Room, has really taken off and is probably one of our most powerful marketing tools. But often when clients approach us now, they're telling us they love the podcast. And our podcast is very, very focused on HR people, what HR people are experiencing. And we also market our own services through that, interviewing people as well. But we also now run a monthly webinar and we tend to have hundreds of, again, HR people on that webinar. We invite various guests and that works really effectively as well. We write a lot, we use Google AdWords, we try and hit as much as we can. And now I think I'm probably going to start looking towards PR and thinking, well, how do we move into that space in the next stage of our development? All requires budget.
Yeah,
and,
the age-old story. Very good.
The age-old story.
So that's brilliant. And you've got quite a range of sort of marketing tools or strategies within that. On the webinar side of things, everyone hates to organize a party and then has that fear of, will anyone show up? How do you get hundreds of HR professionals turning up to your webinars every month?
Good marketing. We do actually have a marketing manager here, and that has been one of our key hires. And, you know, he writes extensively. He co-hosts the podcast with me. He hosts the webinar series and he markets it hugely. But again, it's reputation. And we don't charge for it. The people come free. And obviously the podcast, people hear it for free. And it kind of does its own work for us. You know, we have found that we generate such a huge number of leads from it. We have a good platform. We use a platform where we're able to analyze and see who's on. And, you know, we generate our leads from there and we pick up the phone afterwards and our sales team pick up the phone afterwards and thank people for coming, ask for suggestions about what they'd like to see going forward. And also we check in, is there anything they need from us? And again, that's helping us grow the business. So I think at this point, I've got a bit more wily, I think, Ben. You know, I've been through a very deep recession and the pandemic still standing. So I've had that stop-start feel to the business, ambitious, ready to grow. And then something massive happens outside of my control.
Yeah.
Step back a couple of steps and then it stops, it changes and move forward again.
Got it. Yeah, you have mentioned trying to be strategic about it. But the webinar thing, that another company would say, let's run a webinar and hold it next week or whatever. And then maybe they'd get some people attending, maybe they would not, but they wouldn't necessarily have, you've got a few things listed there, I guess, would be it's good quality. So you make sure it's interesting, helpful, all that kind of stuff. You've got Owen promoting the event itself, but then also you've got the, what do they call it? Muscle reps, doing the reps. So you keep doing it. So it's got momentum. People know to expect it. So they will look out for it. So you put in the hard yards, I guess. So that's a bit of a lesson for people listening to this. You've gone from a solo to hiring and stuff. How do you know when to hire, including which roles to hire first? And, you know, do you measure that by workload, types of work coming in, or something else?
I think it's both in a way. But one thing that I have learned to do is look quite closely when the team says they're overstretched and look to see, well, are they actually overstretched? Could we do things more efficiently? And is there actually a real need for a resource there? Because it's very easy to just keep piling on bodies without necessarily being strategic about it. And as a HR person, you know, I've been workforce planning for years when I worked in-house with various companies that I worked for. And I think you do have to take that approach yourself in your own business and constantly look for the efficiencies first before you move out to hire. I know a couple of years ago we set up a workplace investigation division, and this was kind of an interest of mine to carry out workplace investigations. And maybe about 10 years I started learning how to do them myself, mastered it, and then decided I didn't want to do workplace investigations personally anymore myself. But there was money to be made there. So we set up a division who do that. And that is really growing from strength to strength. And we market that separately. And I think that will be an area of growth for us going forward. And we will put in additional resources there. But again, from a sales and marketing perspective, I think that's sometimes where we don't think about getting the business is important. And in a HR business, having dedicated people to do that piece of work is important as well.
What don't we think about?
I think about the hiring in for people to do the selling and the marketing rather than the work alone.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. That has been a learning point for me. I've always hired in to deliver the service and not really to market it.
On the expansion side. Yeah, got it.
Yeah.
And to your point about before you go on, add another person to the headcount, do analyze the work that's coming. I just had a little flashback to one of my graduate jobs, and I did an industrial relations report for this big company. It's like 60,000 employees. And so every month did this big report analyzing strike statistics and headcount, all this stuff. It would take a week to produce. And then I can't remember why, but for some reason we didn't have the data. We knew we wouldn't have the data coming in 1 month, so it was not going to happen. No one noticed. So we did this massive piece of work and had beautiful charts. They were gorgeous charts, I have to say. But no one noticed. So we could have added headcount to carry on producing that report, but what value would it have brought to the business, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, that's an excellent point you make there. Are there any sort of revenue guidelines you would say? Is it just we've got too much work, or we hit 100K, 200K, 500K? Any guidelines that people can have as guidelines for them in terms of how to hire?
Yeah, I mean, we also introduced a time system, not a time and attendance system for the team, but a logging of our hours. We were doing it by spreadsheet, and it was really hard to assess profitability of each specific job and the time involved in completing work. So that was one of the key pieces of work we did, putting in place this system where everybody logs their time, not like a big brother, because, you know, we very much operate in trust. I'm not interested whether people are doing that. It's about billable hours and about the time spent on projects and measuring that. So having a good handle on productivity is key. But when it comes to revenue, I think it is important to look at each job and then overall as a whole and make sure that each job you take on is profitable. If you're going to make a loss on the job, which sometimes we do because we want business with a particular type of a client, be very clear what else are you going to upsell there so that ultimately the client is profitable for the business. So that would be number one, is each job profitable? If it's not profitable, what are you going to do about it? How do you increase your rates? As your, I suppose, rate of pay goes up, you also have to think about, well, now do my actual rates need to go up? And will the market sustain it? Because you might find yourself too expensive in the marketplace too. I think you have to be quite strategic about how you go about generating profits for your business, how you go about generating your business. So when it comes to those hires, it's based on the numbers. You know, for me, do people have capacity? I can see based on the number of hours they're hired for, do they have capacity to do more? Could they do it more efficiently? If we use technology, which I'm looking at right now at the moment, if we used AI technology, if we used other technologies, would they have more capacity? Would be free time? Do I really need to hire another person? So I take care around that. It's less we hit 100,000, we hit 200,000, whatever, yeah, then I'll hire. We don't do it that way.
Yeah. I remember doing a business turnaround project years and years ago, and I worked closely with the CFO of a business, and it kind of blew my mind where we would look through all the different customer accounts and things like that. This one's profitable. This one's not. This one's profitable. Why is that? Well, look at these and the hours involved, you know, time, materials and stuff. A lot of people wouldn't necessarily stop and look at the profitability of customers, clients, projects in the way that you've described. They just think, well, it's revenue coming in, but you've raised a really good point to analyze that. Did you build bespoke software for that? Did you buy something, you know, in terms of the billable hour type stuff? Is there something that people could look at?
We didn't. We actually, it was a local contact of mine here in Kilkenny that has a software called MindAclient. And we worked with them to give us a customized product, which works really well. And it allowed us, had a really, really smart guy working with us at the time. He was quite techy and quite into, you know, that planning side of that. I don't think I would have ever pulled that off myself, to be honest. But he mapped it all out. What did we need to know? I had numerous meetings with him. And then we would have spoken to my contact there. They developed what we wanted, customized to us, because I couldn't find anything on the marketplace that would give me what I was looking for. And again, we're coming back now at this point as a business and looking at our whole technology, what we're doing, what needs to change, what's irritating about the systems that we're using. And I suppose, how can we get more information, more data that informs our decisions?
Yeah. Very smart. And I guess the data feeds into the structure of the business. And you mentioned, for instance, setting up a business unit around the workplace investigations. But can I ask from an advice perspective for others listening, how do you structure or restructure your operations as the business grows? Like from a management perspective, do you try and get more retainers over time? Do you try to allocate consultants to clients? Or do you divide work up into industries, locations, something like that? What's your advice there? Or how do you do it?
We've done it quite simply at the moment. We've just divided it into two. So we have HR services and workplace investigations, because workplace investigations is just very unique on its own.
Sure.
And so a different kind of HR person works in that section. When it comes to HR services, it's really about providing our promise to our clients is you're going to deal with dedicated advisors. You're not going to deal with different people every time you call. So we honor that promise, and that's the structure that we have put in place there. I am looking at it at the moment. You know, I don't have all the answers,
sure,
Ben, definitely not. Primarily, I'm a good HR person. And I learned that a good HR person is not a good finance person. A good HR person is not a good marketeer necessarily. A good HR person isn't a PR person, and that you need to bring in the experts who have an understanding of things and sometimes spend money, but spend money learning. And I'm doing that at the moment, but it's more looking at how do we become a high performance team that's aligned right across the business, because you can have a workplace investigations division, a HR services division, sales, marketing, finance, and not have it aligned. And I think that's the next phase of growth for me, is aligning all of these so that we're positioned for growth. Right now, that's what I'm doing. I'm about to embark on that in next month. So that's exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like you've landed a juicy HR consulting project.
Yeah. And look, we have a great team with loads of ideas. It's about bringing them together and us all working together to create this business, not just for me. And I think this is also important. It's not just mine anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's my business, but there are people in this business who are as passionate, if not more passionate than me, about this business.
Yeah.
And that's great as well.
Yeah, I've had the privilege to meet some of them people, and they're super dedicated and smart. So yeah, you've built a great place. A tricky one for you. If you had to double the business in 1 year, what would you do?
That's what I'm trying to do now, Ben. That's a good question.
Firstly, why? Some people say, no, I'm happy where I am.
Yeah, it's hard, I think, sometimes as an entrepreneur to even understand that yourself, isn't it? For me, the ambition at the moment is to be the number one provider in Ireland for outsourced HR services. I think we have a very niche section in the workplace investigations division that is poised for growth, and we could, if I knew what to do there to position ourselves, then I would be doing it. Hence why I've engaged a consultant to work with us around the technology piece and aligning all these different elements of the business. So in terms of doubling, I think it is going to be about building sales and marketing primarily as the first focus, and then ensuring that the rest of the business is aligned and working well together. I think it will involve new hires. I think it will involve buying new technology. I think it will involve me doing things differently than I'm doing them right now. So it's that learning curve again, isn't it? And I think anytime you stop learning as a self-employed person, you're going nowhere.
Yeah, definitely. And as we head to the end of our time here, we've talked about practical stuff, operations, marketing, and so on. On the emotional side, you've been through the roller coaster, I'm guessing. You've been on the roller coaster, ups and downs. For context, what have you been through? And then secondly, you know, how do you handle the bad times as well as the good?
Yeah, I've gone through boom and bust, which has been really, really challenging. So when I started out, you know, I first had the challenges of how to get the business, and I learned and I networked. And then there was this kind of glittering golden period where I was at balls all the time and coffees and lunches and networking and meetings and just loving life. And then in 2008, the recession hit. But at that time, I had just purchased the office that I'm in right now, signed on the dotted line on my birthday. 3 months later, the world recession hit and business literally fell off a cliff. At that time, I had been very much involved in providing services to the construction sector, who was absolutely annihilated here in Ireland, as it was worldwide. And so surviving at that time, I ended up laying off a number of people, making people redundant and working on my own for a period of time. But, you know, never gave up, worked hard, continued and started growing again and developing services at that time. And then that ended, thankfully, and life returned to normal and was, you know, working away, building the business again. Pandemic hit. But I'd learned a huge amount during the recession. So we weren't so heavily dependent when that pandemic hit on one particular sector. We had diversified and we were working with lots of different sectors. The business wasn't badly hit when the pandemic came. It was more about figuring out how to think about consultancy differently. Because up until that point, for me, I had believed that consulting was driving around the country, going into people's premises, having meetings and delivering services in person. By the time it came to the pandemic, and I was confined to a 5 mile radius, and I happened to live in the back of Beyonds. There was nothing within that 5 mile radius that could have got us business. And all my team were at home working remotely. At that point, we had to rethink the business again and rethink how to deliver services remotely, how to continue to work with our client base and not lose our client base, and at the same time grow. And now that the pandemic is over, for me, it's very much about, right, now is the opportunity. There will be other business cycles. Who knows what will come? I couldn't have predicted either the recession followed by the depression or the pandemic. So who knows what's to come in the future? But make hay while the sun shines and make sure that you're diversified enough to survive whatever happens.
Yeah.
That's my 2 pence word.
Any final advice on the business growth side of things? So, you know, be strong, be resilient, and then when the sun comes out, make hay, either from a marketing or an op, you know, team management, client management, any advice if you've got a group of HR business owners around you, how would you help them or what advice would you share for them to grow their business in an enjoyable way?
Yeah, keep an eye on your finances. I think that's important. Sometimes it isn't the focus maybe of somebody who's coming into consulting for the first time because it's not a lot to learn. Network extensively. I still do that. I think that's important. Be very clear about your target. What are you after? What are you trying to deliver? And also be careful about your own work-life balance. I have worked incredibly hard over many years and enjoyed it at times and maybe not at others, but you will have various, I suppose, roller coaster of emotions, and the resilience piece is key. If you know what you want, you're planning for it, you're driving towards it. In my experience, it usually happens. And if you want to be a sole consultant who has a lifestyle approach to it, stick with that. You know, be clear about the clients you take on, how profitable they actually are, and what you're actually going to deliver for them.
Nice. Just to clarify, when you say keep an eye on your finances, what do you look at either daily or weekly? Is there a cash flow, P&L, what do you actually look at for someone listening?
Profitability of each job, that's key. Then obviously it's about getting your money in. So I learned in the recession, delivering service is one thing, getting paid for delivering service is another, and getting paid on time for delivering the service is the third. So, and you obviously have to expend a certain amount of energy in getting payment. So it's, from my perspective, I look at that every week. What's outstanding out there with our clients, and a call in from somebody helps move that along. So we would look at the profitability, how we are doing each month. We look at our sales targets in terms of, are we on target? Are we off target? And having very clear plans about what we want by the end of the year. And look, I've learned that over time. That certainly didn't happen year one, year two. Did it even happen year five? I don't know. Possibly not. But I've learned over time that that's key. That's key to effectively running and managing your business.
Yeah, that's smart. Well, very good. So, Mary, if someone's listening to this and they're an employer or they're a consultant or an HR-related firm, maybe in Ireland, but maybe in another country and they have clients in Ireland, what should they do next to learn more about Inside HR?
Well, reach out to me on LinkedIn. I love to network. I still network. I've networked virtually now in many cases. I always love, with our podcast webinars, we're always looking for experts and people who do something unique in HR. So again, you could always reach out to O'Lyons, who's our marketing manager. If you have a unique story that you'd love to share with us and our audience, delighted to hear from you. And you can check out our website, www.insighthr.ie, or podcast HR Room, or the HR Room webinar either. That's on demand. So you'll find all that on our website.
Fabulous. Yeah. So if you're listening to this, I highly recommend it. I love the topics you cover and the way you include people in that stuff. That's both through the webinars and through the podcast, which is amazing. And you and your team have done a great job. So Mary, thank you for sharing the inside story of Inside HR. And I just wish you all the best for the future. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ben. It was a pleasure chatting to you.
Thanks for joining us today on A Better HR Business, the podcast that explores the world of HR consulting and HR tech businesses. For show notes and downloads, go to www.getmorehrclients.com/podcast. That's getmorehrclients.com/podcast. Remember to subscribe and share the show with any friends who are busy growing a HR business. Thanks, and see you next time.